Welcome to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall, a discussion of blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and why it matters to you.
Hey folks, welcome into Beyond the Blockchain here with you on a Tuesday night on 106.5 FM Talk. I'm joined, as always, by the Johnny Gwynn. Johnny, how are you, bud?
I am doing good. Living my AI life.
the AI life as it is. Man, we got a lot going on this week. It's another one of those weeks where we just, an hour is not enough, but we'll try and do the best we can to walk you through it. I feel like every week is a month, and every month is a year, and you know, some months feel like a decade. I spend a lot of time trying to keep up with this, and I can't keep up. I mean, sometimes somebody will send me something and go, have you seen this? And I'm like, I've read that that could be a possibility, but I did not know that was a real thing yet. We'll talk about that later in the show, one of those.
That's why I kind of turned it to say, let me grow in my way of doing it and not keep finding the new shiny thing.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't getting started on something that I was learning, like a platform, and then all of a sudden it'd be like 15 to 20% of me understanding it, and all of a sudden I'm moving to the next thing.
Right.
So I wasn't learning anything, and it's just gobbledygook, you know? So now I'm really focused on Claude Pro, and I'll tell you what I'm working on our third segment on what we're doing for AI this week.
Perfect.
But we have news.
New news.
So we call this section the News Bites.
Yep.
And this is terrible, B-Y-T-E-S. I love good terrible puns. Story one, humans needed. Humans not needed. AI will fully automate its own R&D by 2028. So Jack Clark, Anthropic, which is Claude, now gives better than even odds by the end of 2028, AI will be doing all of its own research and training. And why that's important is, because this is the difference between AI makes life easier and AI evolves faster than anything in history, reshaping jobs, economies, power structures, and daily life at the speed humans can't keep up with. The era of controllable progress may be ending.
Well, what I like to think
that sounds so ominous, man.
Yeah. Well, what I like to think through there is, okay, we're going to be able to cure most diseases.
Yeah, the yin yang of AI, right?
Yeah, we're going to be able to solve really big problems that we just didn't have the human brain power dedicated to solving it. And now, at scale, we're going to be able to solve these really big problems. And I don't know if the yin is good or the yang is good, but right, it's one side correct. Of it.
Well, by the way, so the little dots in the yin and the yang always says there's a little evil in the good and a little good in the evil. See, that's the crazy thing too. Yes, so you have to have one without the other. So, yes. Yeah. All right, story number two, Trump's AI U-turn. Trump administration is shifting from let AI rip to considering government pre-release vetting of powerful models after Anthropic's Mythos AI raised serious cyber attack fears, forming a working group with big tech. That would be Anthropic, Google, and OpenAI for early reviews without full blocks. It aims to dodge massive hacks on banks and power grids while still pushing fast innovation in effects, jobs, scams, privacy, and daily tools. This kind of goes back to me of Trump, I think, is U-turned a lot on crypto, except for his own personal stuff. Yeah. He is not the anti-war president I thought he was. So while he's not as bad as other ones, like I really hate George Bush and I don't want to get into Obama, Trump is just another, just he might not be as bad or whatever he is, but he's a narcissist and he's just reneging on his promises. And they were big things, by the way. We talked about that. Unfettered AI, make crypto great, and stay out of wars. And he is failing on all three. I'll give him immigration an A, but everything else is D minus an F. It's really sucky. So
yeah. Well, I agree that there needs to be guardrails on AI development. Unfortunately, the Chinese do not.
Oh yeah, no. They're racing as fast as they can, especially with not only AI but robotics.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. There's that one. Here's the last one that goes back to what you said before. AI just beat ER doctors at diagnosis, and it's only getting smarter. A Harvard study on real ER patients found OpenAI's 0-1 preview model correctly diagnosed cases 67% of the time versus 55% of the time for attending physicians. Newer models are 35% better on medical benchmarks. and doctors couldn't reliably tell AI from human notes.
Well, I think ER is a good...
Yes, that's a great one to do.
It's a great to think about.
The triage has to be fast.
Yeah, it has to be fast. The AI
it's,
does
it's
not,
chaotic.
The AI does not get tired. The AI has not worked a 12-hour shift and, you know, is exhausted and, you know, hasn't eaten all, or sat down all day. So maybe triaging there is a good tool for AI.
That's a great place to test it, though.
Yeah, and the thing I always like to tell people is it's not getting worse. It's not getting I don't know what's going to happen with it, but it's not going backwards.
Well, bottom line is this: the helpful tool phase is ending of AI. We're sliding into the holy crap, it's evolving faster than we can regulate era. And we need to buckle up. These machines are about to get really ambitious. But again, I want to be positive. We want to be positive about this. Too easy to get negative. But it's not full rogue mode, but we are definitely doing some things where we need to keep an eye on it. Yeah. So there you go. Well, and well, we do. That's what we talk about every week.
That's right. And we're going to go take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more AI on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey folks, welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain here with you on a Tuesday night on FM Talk 106.5. We're talking AI, and in this segment, we're going to talk more about how do we guardrail the AI a little bit, and how do we start to use the words, I don't know, because AI does not understand
those
words.
Hold on, how does AI? AI starts using, I don't know.
We need them to start because they don't understand that.
Yeah.
You know, the perfect meme for this is talking to your wife like it's a, like your AI. And she's like, why didn't you take the chicken out of the freezer? And the response is, you're absolutely right to question me about that. I did not follow the instructions.
Yeah, that's a great point. You're really good at doing that. I should have done that in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah. And then I saw, and this kind of dovetails into that, one of Mark Cuban's criticisms of AI and how it's going to be implemented in companies is you can't guarantee that two users get the same answer because it's all right. It's all about the prompt.
Correct.
Right. And so that's going to be interesting. But this kind of this AI version of I always know I'm right, and unless you push back on me, I'm not ever going to say, So what I try and do, and you can tell us more about this, but what I try and do is say, on a scale of 1 to 10.
Oh, not, yeah, probability.
How
yeah.
confident are you on this?
So I'll do the setup here.
Yeah.
So the loudest voice in the room, why the future of AI depends on the words, I don't know. Okay, we all know that one person who is absolutely certain about everything, even when they're completely wrong, okay, we all know that person, right?
Oh, of course.
Today's most advanced AI act the same way, delivering every answer with unshakable certainty, even when it's just flipping a coin. MIT researchers say the most important breakthrough in tech isn't making AI smarter, it's teaching it the power of saying, I'm not sure. So that is pretty, that's something we don't usually talk about in this world.
Right.
It was more about like, wow, look how powerful this thing is, or look at all the things it can do. And now we're saying, let's step back a little bit and says, when I trick it a little bit or when I stump it, it's not wrong. And it's okay if you just say, let me step back with this. Let me think about this for a while.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's something we just can't get to yet.
Well, I think that's why the human in the loop matters, right? Humans have discernment. Yes. The AI does not have discernment. The AI is in its current version, is a pattern predicting machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's predicting patterns based on the probability. But it often gets it wrong. And I use the example of sports all the time, right? It'll tell you some answer and you're like, oh yeah, well, that can't be right because that player got traded last week. Oh, you're absolutely right. That player did get traded last week. Sorry, let me redo my calculations.
Mine is when we're just finished going over my portfolio of my trading bot, and it will say, well, what do you think about DRAM or something like that, right? And I'm like, what do you mean when I think about it? We just bought it.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, you're right. I can't believe I missed that. And you're like, what? Dude, how did you miss that?
Yeah.
So then I get worried and I tell it, I'm getting a little unnerved here that you didn't know that we did that 5 minutes ago. How can I trust what we're doing going forward? Yeah. And like, oh, I understand your frustration. Da, da, da. And it's like, but it does do that.
And it's burning tokens all the time when it's apologizing to you. It's just eating through your tokens. So I took some of these Anthropic courses, and discernment is one of the biggest things they teach in these courses because the AI doesn't have the discernment. And it will, you know, I'm still very bullish on AI. Don't get me wrong. It's going to automate a lot of jobs. And where we talk about the human in the loop is, maybe we'll talk about Coinbase later, but the AI can do the work of dozens of people. And then you still need the human to judge the output.
Well, you need the manager, the foreman, the whatever.
And it'll be the same way with robots, right? You'll still have a human that is the foreman of the robots.
Yes. Well, we went to AI meetup last week, and it was pretty good. You know, it was great because it was really basic. It was kind of Claude for business.
Right.
And a lot of that we already know. A lot of it was something we talk about in our show. But one of the things that the instructor guy or the speaker kind of reiterated, and I just liked it, was how simple it was. It was like, if it's important to your company, a human has to be in the chain.
That's right.
And I was like, we should all put that up above our computers.
Yeah.
That says, if this is really important.
Yeah.
And also I would say another thing other than being a marketer or a PR person is if it is public facing, meaning if this automation or this document or this email that I am making is going out, it had better not be automated. It better say, draft me the document and let me approve it first.
Right.
And that is something that I've been adding to everything that I do now in my instructions on my projects is, if this is a document that anyone else other than us will see, I want you to make a draft and not a final product until I verify it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly right. It's pretty interesting let me back up. What is most interesting to me about this is the speed in the ability to ship new versions.
I get it every day on Claude.
What used to take 12 to 18 to 24 months, now they're shipping daily, weekly, whatever. And it's that compounding nature of the change that is most interesting. And so when you're seeing these big job cuts from, you know, the big publicly traded companies, it's because they do understand that there needs to be a human in the chain. And they also understand that if I just have a couple humans to verify and, you know, as Ronald Reagan used to say, trust but verify, then I can ship, you know, things at an incredible rate. And that's just not something we're used to.
And that was one of my favorite writers, marketing guy that worked with multi-billion-dollar company, Seth Godin.
Oh, yeah. I love Seth Godin.
Seth Godin used to always say, especially with artists, because artists want to like make something and then their ego gets in and they're like, oh, my God, but people hate it. And they want to keep revising it. His whole thing is keep shipping. And the idea is like fix it in 2.0, fix it in 3.0. That really is in his mind. He's been saying that since the mid-90s. Always be shipping.
My favorite thing about Seth Godin's blog is some days it'll be three sentences.
Yeah. Again, they say he's the world's best blogger.
It'll just be three sentences. And you're like, well, there was no reason to write 17 paragraphs about this. You nailed it in three sentences.
And he also didn't crap all over AI when he wrote about it. I mean, remember, you know, because we did that a couple, like maybe last year, it was like the idea of like AI can write a poem, but the human is what makes it poetry.
Right.
You know, AI can write a song, but the human is what puts meaning to that song. You know, and it's interesting that it's the idea of like, this is a tool you can't ignore. Right. It's the idea of understanding kind of like the nature of it, or like, I think he called it the soul of it. Like it's not quite there yet. So the idea is this is a great tool, but it's not the real thing, which we understand that. But again, getting to a point where discerning what is AI and humans, because right now I can read something and go, AI wrote that.
Oh, of course. But I'm very good at AI wrote it or AI created it.
But
but that's when people are lazy with their prompts. And, right? And you can tell now that more people are using AI. They're lazy with their prompts. You can see a flyer on Facebook and go, oh, yeah, that's AI generated. But that's because someone was lazy with their prompts and they didn't say, give me a photorealistic image taken by an Nikon 3000 with this shutter speed, this aperture. You know what I mean? Like yes. they didn't describe in detail what they wanted. They just said, make me a flyer.
Right.
And then generically, they all look alike.
Yep. Write me an email, not specific. Or again, that's the whole thing too. I'm training the Johnny
Gwynn. That's where you're seeing your skills.
So
right?
I'm changing. So I'm training a Johnny Gwynn brain that lives in somewhere and it is learning my writing style, but better. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm still not a strong writer, but it will at least look at, like, oh, he's kind of sarcastic, and he's serious when he's serious, and he likes to use the, you know, the Oxford comma and not the other. I mean, all kind of stuff, but it has to look at, you have to give it samples.
Training data.
And then say, make me better than what I am, but never make it feel like AI is not writing. AI is writing me. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing that I saw that was pretty interesting related to this is now the AI is starting to be trained on AI-generated data.
Garbage in, garbage out, right? You know,
and back to our famous idiocracy examples, you know, it's like what we thought was, you know, Idiocracy, the movie by Mike Judge in the 90s was like, however many years in the 400 or something years
250
years
250 years no yeah 100 500 years in the future we're all dumb if civilization is dumb because we've all been inbreeding and
he got the premise right, he just got the timeline way wrong
by 200 by 450 or 460 years.
I mean, we are quickly sliding down.
Okay, so I want to add a new thing to our shows moving forward.
All right,
anytime we say something that we bring up in news today that reflects a detail or a theme of that movie, there's going to be a ding, ding, and it's going to say, there's an idiocracy, because it is, again, what became a funny fictional movie is now starting to be a cautionary tale documentary.
Yeah, not even a mockumentary anymore. We're just full-on documentary of a daily life of people.
Okay, so this is interesting. So let's go back to the idea of the I don't know and how they're training and how MIT is training. So what they're doing, this is the solution, okay?
Right.
They are developing reinforcement learnings with calibration rewards, which is it rewards AI for being honest about uncertainty, forcing a confidence score alongside every answer. So it's kind of the idea of, like, it's okay for you to say, I'm 75% sure of this, and I'm not going to denigrate you for saying that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what it needs, right? Like, I feel 75% confident about it. And then you can prompt it back and say, okay, what information do you need to increase your confidence score?
Yeah.
Just like you would a human, right? Like, but look, let's be fair. These are all criticisms of AI, but everybody has a human in their office that also knows everything about everything.
Or says they know everything.
Well, they think they do, right? And they'll come into a meeting and tell you they're 100% certain about whatever garbage it is that they're certain about. And that's the whole Dunning-Kruger effect in real life.
Right.
You know, it's like the less you know about something, the more certain you are you know everything about it. And so, you know, that is a human-like trait of the AI because it was created and trained by humans.
Okay, so in medicine, law, or finance, the AI that says, I'm 95% sure when it's actually wrong is more dangerous than the one that simply fails because it stops users from seeking a second opinion.
That's right.
Like, if it told you 70%, you might go to Grok, or you might go to another thing, or you might go talk to, like I said, a doctor, a financial advisor, or a lawyer to say, I've got this information. What is your analysis now? Mm-hmm. But when you have put too much trust in that one thing that may or may not be right, that 5% could also really be the one that really, that detail might be the one that really trips you up.
Yeah. And, you know, have you seen the news that, was it Dubai or the UAE maybe, is Dubai's in the UAE, but the UAE is moving toward full AI government operations in the next several years.
I remember a story last year we did where I think it was in India.
Yeah.
Where they set up a kind of like a Doge thing. It was a procurement finance minister that was a avatar woman.
Estonia. It was Estonia.
Estonia.
Yeah.
And the idea was it is looking at our budgeting and looking at our statement, you know, government spending, and there is no bias here. It is like, bam, you either prove why you spend this money or need it, or you got to say why you spent this money.
Yeah.
Where is this money?
Yeah.
Which, hold on, I am not against that.
No, I think it's a very good starting place, right? So but it's again, like,
yeah. Now you get your day in court. Now, right. The evidence gets shown, an investigator looks at it, saves them hundreds of hours of investigative time. They find out what can stick, and then you have your day in court. Now, you can prove it, yes or no, but it found it much better and faster.
I mean, pick whatever number you want, right? But it's going to be we're going to end up in a world where, you know, AI is doing 80% of the work and the human the last 20, or 90-10, or 95-5, wherever it is, but there'll still be a human there. All right.
One real quick one thing. Smaller AI models that admit uncertainty can outperform massive overconfident ones. It's the David versus Goliath angle of tech. Well, you might want to look for a smaller company maybe doing this that might be a little better for you.
Maybe so. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to you more on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Fill us in a little bit on what you're working on, how you're using AI in your daily life right now.
This is very meta because it's about me using AI and the show.
Okay.
So the headline is, I fired our research team, our producer, and our news director, and replace them all with AI before lunch.
Yeah, so if the show is garbage, don't blame us anymore.
Don't blame me. So I spent this Tuesday, building an AI-powered production system for this very show. Inside of this thing I built is a tool that has no coding, didn't use a tech degree, I don't have any staff, and what we built was a show brain, which is a permanent knowledge base that lives in our AI project. And every new conversation that you and I use goes into the brain, and then it remembers it to be able to say, hey, we talked about that 3 weeks ago. And it's building the foundation of the show. Then I have a story scanner. This is the time saver right here. Instead of drowning in 15 newsletters every morning and pulling up all these stories and all this stuff, I literally have it pick for me from those things and give me small descriptions that I say what I find interesting, and then we go forward on it. Then we have a 5-stage production pipeline. We scan the web, select stories, curate a balanced show rundown with our producer notes. We build a full show notes. We write scripts as we need it, and it's one flow and in one place. And then the editorial brain remembers how we keep doing this, because right now I'm training it, right? We're training the show brain. And eventually it's going to end up, this tool will end up being our true curator of stories, helping us write the production notes, and then helping us put out a better product. But we are definitely in the chain. We are not out of it. We are the style makers. We are the curators. We are the people who say, this is what actually goes out. It's just making all that research and all that hunting one-tenth the time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think with the work that you're doing here, I mean, we're saving several hours each in producing the show.
But I'm still going to do certain things, like when I'm reading X, like I'll read something like, oh, this is great. I want to know more about it. So I'll take a screenshot of it, you know, and then I start putting it off to the side. Well, then I can start putting it into the brain saying, hey, I found these things during the week. Mm-hmm. Just keep these and remind me at the end of the week if we should expand upon these or just delete it. Right. So, yeah. So I'm doing that. We're doing that anyway.
Right. No, I agree. It's just going to be a lot faster and we'll be able to handle it a lot easier. I think it's a smart way of handling it. And honestly, I think probably you know, if people aren't using it in that capacity, they're really missing out on one of the ways the tools can really benefit you right now.
I mean, it's just huge. And then once I kept doing it manually going, why am I doing this manually? And I said, I don't have time to sit down and make the automation. Well, that's insane. Because once I sat down, now it took me 2 hours to figure it out and work with it and start playing around with it. And it's not far along as I want it to get yet, because I want to use Cowork next, Claude Cowork. But right now, I'm just building the brain. I'm building the knowledge base for setting the foundational stuff. Okay, this is a small thing, but a big thing for me. I get too many emails all day.
Okay.
It overwhelms me of like, I think I lose important emails because I look at that 157 on there in the morning and I'm like, ugh, and I've got to go through and, you know, all that garbage, right? Well, of course, one of them is all of these new newsletters we both get, because it's the also I thought was the easiest way to get content
right.
for this show. Well, I'm going to get rid of every one of those newsletters because I gave Claude all the newsletters to say, you just summarize these for me. I don't want them in my email anymore. You just go ahead and pull them for me and then give me the summaries. So that's going to clear out like, I don't know, 150 emails a week.
Yeah.
Because these are daily newsletters.
Right.
So that's, again, huge for me just to simplify stuff.
Yeah. I think that's a smart way of doing it. What I'm working on AI this week is I had a conversation with a landscaping company about using AI to automate their routes.
Oh, nice.
You know, like,
yeah, don't waste gas or hit this neighborhood with, because you know UPS and Amazon use all that stuff. And they've been using that for a decade.
Do I have a 5-man team, a 3-man team, and a 2-man team?
Yeah.
How do I automate my routes so that the 2-man team isn't overlapping with the 5-man team? And how long is
wasted energy and resources?
How long are all these projects going to take along the way? You know,
I can tell that from my pool cleaning guy.
Yeah.
He needs that big time.
Yeah, there's no reason to drive across town. Like, if he needs to readjust his schedule, like,
on
Mondays, I do this one in Midtown, this one downtown, that one in Spring Hill. Why don't you just bundle up your Spring Hill clients
on
one day, bundle up your Midtown clients.
Let's talk about this.
All right.
First thing that company has to do, right, is to get a spreadsheet of all of their customers and their addresses.
That's right.
Okay. And maybe services they need. So to add to that spreadsheet, that's the first thing you got to do.
So you've got to know.
And AI cannot help you with that. You got to do that yourself. You got to do
the work yourself, right? So the example that I give when I'm talking to businesses is AI is like putting up sheetrock on the wall, but we can't put the sheetrock up until you've done the electrical and the plumbing
and the studs.
Yeah. Like you've got to do the basic work first to get that ready for the wall to be drywalled. And so that's where I see the biggest gap for a lot of, you know, small to medium sized businesses is they don't know that data.
Yeah.
Or somebody or different people know the data, but there's not one central repository of that data, right? Like, you need to not only know what are my addresses, you need to know what is the acreage, what tools need to be on the truck.
How long does it usually take?
How long does it take? What tools do I need on each truck for each
What chemicals
job?
That I need for the pool guy or and landscaping?
Yeah.
So again, as soon as you build out that process, again, as detailed as possible, then the magic happens, because then you can say you put it into your system.
That's right.
Again, it's got to be something that's agiotic AI, not generative AI. Well, hold on. Right. You can do generative. That just means you have to do it every time the same way.
You just need to do
agiotic
it
already does it for you because you give it instructions. But the idea could be, I mean, just the first thing you would say is, look at my staff.
Yeah.
Right? Look at my client base. Look at the locations and make me the most efficient routes and days for me to do this whole thing in 1 month or one, whatever that is. And then you can start working just on that first thing. Don't change everything. Just work on how to make your efficient driving and resources.
Yeah. Just start there.
Yeah.
Just start there. I had another conversation with a friend that is in pharmaceutical sales. And she has to touch all these different doctors so many times a month.
That sounds weird, by the way.
has to make contact.
There you go.
With so many doctors. You're right, that did sound bad. We try and keep the show PG. But,
ding, ding, ding.
sometimes it doesn't. But anyway, same idea of like, all right, what's that doctor's specific needs?
Yeah.
When's the last time you had contact with them? What was the last conversation? Here are their addresses. Optimize my route so that I'm not driving. And, you know, a lot of farmer reps are regional, right? So it's like, I'm not driving to Thomasville one day and then Montgomery the second day.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have gone to Montgomery and then hit Thomasville on the way back.
It's a logistics expert telling you this is how you need to do this.
Yeah. And you know, in your brain, you think, well, of course I know that, but that's not how your day ends up, right? Your day ends up chasing whatever the issue of the day is, and trying to make sure
but over you get time, your touch points. You could get to the point saying, I'm living by this thing because this is the way to make it work.
That's right.
With it, when the exception happens, it's not all the time. It starts becoming the exception. One of the things that would be so cool for a salesperson is, what if you could figure out that route, but it also followed you? And so like 5 miles before you get to your meeting, it already sends you your dossier
your meeting notes.
It gives you your doctor's name, what they ordered last, their kid's name. Does he like golf? Does she like yoga? Whatever, all those things. So you're walking in with like
with your brief
right there on your phone. So when you walk in, you just know everything or what you want to push on them or what the new product is probably for them. Yeah. That would be pretty cool. But again, it's all triggered by your GPS, not just theirs.
Now, if you want to get a little creepier, you could load in all their social profiles and be like, oh, I saw your kid had a great weekend at the at the baseball tournament this weekend.
Cyber stalking.
You know, or I see it's your anniversary coming up next week. You know, you got any big plans?
And I'll take that back. I made the joke cyber stalking. It wasn't even a good joke, but that is actually good due diligence. Yeah. it's publicly available data.
It is.
And so they're putting that they're putting that into the world. It's not like you're hacking something to get it. So, but again, AI people, it's not for the super nerdy big tech people. It literally, here's the thing. Start putting together your policy manuals, your process out of your brain onto paper. Put all your HR notes, all your timesheets, all your forms. Everything needs to start being digitized and putting it into a warehouse, which would be Google Doc, and start putting everything in there because that is the building blocks to all this incredible stuff that makes you more money and more efficient.
And if you're, to your point about Google, if you're overwhelmed by it, just use Google Drive.
Google Drive, baby.
You don't have to worry about extra tools, new processes.
And it's free.
Just use your Google Drive.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, it's our favorite segment, Beyond the Blockchain. And this one is pretty weird. And in a last minute edition, we may talk about kamikaze dolphins. We'll see you in a minute on Beyond the Blockchain.
Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain with Scott Tindall.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to Beyond the Blockchain, and it's time for mine and Johnny's favorite segment, maybe yours as well. It's Beyond the Blockchain, and there's plenty of weirdness to talk about. Johnny, how weird are we getting this?
Okay. Game? Pulpits, portals, and the Pentagon. Is the government prepping the churches of America for the ultimate paradigm shift? Okay.
Pulpits, portals.
Portals and the Pentagon.
Okay.
Trump prepares to declassify new UFO files, a startling narrative is emerging from the religious community. Reports say the U.S. government is briefing influential pastors to prepare their congregations for a disclosure that may not just confirm alien life, but redefine the very origin of humanity, from interdimensional creators to spiritual demons. Theology and technology are colliding in a head-on collision.
Well, that was a lot in one paragraph.
That was a ton. I've got a probability summary down the road if you want to hear it.
Well, let's go ahead and jump into that now. I want to know where we are.
Government releasing new UFO files probability? Very likely. Confirmed by the president and the Pentagon.
Okay.
Content world-changing. Content that is world-changing. Yep. Contested, right?
Okay.
So J.D. Vance and I forget her name, Luna something, say yes. So maybe something's coming out that will change the way we look at the world. Mm-hmm. Government telling pastors aliens created us, that's what's unverified. And only local claims, no official corroboration.
So people keep saying that the society is going to freak out about this. And my answer to all of this every single time is, tell us whatever you want. Do I still have to pay my power bill this month? Because if I do, then people's brains are not going to be fried. They're going to be focused on going back to work. People don't believe. Look, I'll be honest with you. The government can tell us anything they want. I'm not going to believe them. I don't believe them. Why would I believe them now?
The professional.
I don't believe them about anything else.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, I'm going to start believing them. But it may be true. I don't know. My general answer to everything now is, I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Well, I have said this. I quit saying no way that will happen.
Yeah.
Because the last 6 years have been many, many things I thought would happen, but not in my lifetime, or I wouldn't see it. And boy, was I wrong.
Yeah.
But I believe we've been in a 70-year psyop anyway of the government preparing us for news like this by using pop culture.
Yeah.
You know, well, E.T. Anybody under
the age of 40 has watched every Marvel movie and believes in multiple timelines and interdimensional travel already.
But when our parents were teenagers and even younger, they had all those, Martian ladies take over the Earth. I mean, there was this just constant thing of, it maybe exists, and then it gets more and more. And then, of course, years later, you get into, like, Close Encounter of the Third Kind. I mean, that is as believable as a story as, like, anything I've ever seen out there of, like, that's probably how it would happen.
Yeah.
But I think it's the idea of, like, being prepared. We have been prepared through this through decades and decades and decades and decades. And then I told you I was sitting at Judy's, which is a meet and three.
Yeah.
Restaurant, salt of the earth people is what I'd call them.
Yeah.
And this older dude is sitting there, and this was a thing on Fox News, and it was something about something in a rock they found or whatever, in a rock, not in iRock, in a rock, that kind of fed on the idea of, like, alien life is real. And you couldn't really hear it. It was just the Chiron or whatever. And the dude who's probably about 65 years old looks to his wife and goes, look, they're saying alien life is true. The government's saying that. He goes, I knew that years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't even think about it. He just said, I knew that years ago.
Yeah.
And then next, went on to the next thing, talking about, the basketball game or whatever. Right. And I was like, holy moly, I just saw that psyop in work right there.
Yeah.
So.
It's weird times, man.
You tell a hardcore Christian, though, that God didn't make us.
Well.
It's going to be tough. What a definition of God is.
Well, my theory on that is, if you think about it rationally and logically, it doesn't really change that much because someone still had to create that.
Yeah.
Right? There still has to be an ultimate creator somewhere. Just because I didn't get the whole book and there were chapters missing
right
along the way doesn't change anything for me. Now, I think it changes low IQ people for sure. Low IQ people that can't think through anything other than what they've already been told by, their pastor and,
That's just not low IQ people, though. That's people who have a very rigid mindset.
Rigid mindset.
Mindset. I know a lot of variant.
Let me clarify that. By people with less ability to change their mind, right? Like, and this is, I guess, maybe I am talking about low IQ, because to me, the sign of intelligence is you're given new information, and as you get new information, you're able to change your mind.
That's called evolution.
Yeah, it's people that aren't able to change their mind about something that are going to really struggle with it.
Okay, let's get to the bottom line here.
Okay.
This isn't just a story about aliens. It's a story about the collapse of traditional authority. Whether the interdimensional beings are real or not, there's a coordinated effort to ready the public for a world where the old rules of science and religion no longer apply.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it.
Which is kind of like a renaissance, if you think about it.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
That stumped you.
Yeah.
Well, let me think about that.
That doesn't happen often that I'm left speechless. But
hold on. We've had moments in our life, I'm not saying as drastic as changing the metaphysics and the spiritual world, right? But 9/11 changed a lot of things that I thought how the world existed. COVID lockdowns changed it. Well, hold on. It accentuated the things that I already feared from government. All these things. So there are things we have seen these big changes.
Right.
How we react to it.
I guess here's where my brain goes on this. I think a lot of religion has been sanitized to remove the supernatural.
But the mysticism is gone.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, if you read the text, if you read the Bible, it is full of supernatural.
Oh, it's mysticism. It's an immense amount of mysticism.
Why is that surprising?
And institutional religions take it away because I think it makes them not as credible as they think they want to be. I mean, you got a Vatican who sits It has two seats in the UN, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
Okay? It's kind of hard for them to talk about magic spiders or something. You know? I mean, seriously. Or the mysticism of Judaism and Christianity is beautiful because it's something more than what we can imagine. Like it says, your brain cannot comprehend the creation and existence of God.
Right.
That's the idea. Your little brain can't even understand it.
That's why none of this freaks me out.
Yeah.
I know. I've got to figure out how to live with it.
And I hope it's something I can't understand. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I really hope it's something that's so incredibly immense that my little brain can't comprehend the brilliance of that.
Yeah.
I think that's actually makes it more special, not more Harry Potter.
That's
to
right.
me, it feels more, this is something that's really special if you believe this. And I don't want it to be nothing. I want it to be something incredible.
Right. Me too.
You know? Okay. Well, you know. Well,
that's a good way to sum that up. And we're out of time. So next week, we're going to talk about the fact that Pete Hegseth says,
yes,
we cannot confirm nor deny whether or not we have kamikaze dolphins.
In Iran. The Kamikaze Dolphins will be the name of my next metal band.
Ooh, I like it. All right. We'll see you next time. We'll be on the blockchain.